So it's a great pleasure to introduce Professor Miranda Jakiša, who is a professor of South and East Slavic literatures and cultures at Humboldt University in Berlin. She herself studied in Glasgow, Sarajevo, Constance, received her PhD from the University of Tübingen, and with a study devoted to Bosnian literature, an emergent area. Her main research interests are contemporary Slavic literatures and cultures, post-dramatic theater, and East European film. Her current projects include Stagings of Dissent, The Partisan Narrative in Yugoslavia, as well as Radicality and Avant-Garde. She has recently edited books on Negotiating Beginnings, Yugoslavia and Lebanon, and on Partisans in Yugoslavia, Literature, Film, and Visual Culture. She is currently a fellow at the Imre Kertész College in Vienna, completing a project on early Yugoslav partisan novels. And today she will speak to us about post-Yugoslav theater and its stagings and its relationship to politics. So, help me welcome Miranda Jakiša.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks a lot for this nice introduction, and more than that, to Krika and to you for inviting me, for having me here. I'm very happy. This is my first time in Madison. I'm enjoying my stay very much. So today, I'm going to talk to you, as Thomas said, about the political calling of contemporary stages in post-Yugoslavia, in focusing on one of its most famous directors, which is Oliver Frljić. I intend not only to introduce the new political theater scene to you, that is represented by Frljić, he is one of many, but maybe the one with the most distinct calling, but also to show that it is the concept of post-dramatics, which is a reconsideration of the theatrical form, as well as Rancière's ideas on aesthetics and politics, his notion of real dissensus, that accomplish this new political awareness on stages. Call of Duty, COD, in my talk's title, deliberately draws on popular culture and on a well-known first-person shooter game that is considered to endanger teenagers in displaying and celebrating random violence. In the first three versions of this popular video game, the player in non-coherent episodes, I see some of you seem to know it, you're laughing, in non-coherent episodes takes in turns different sides in various World War II battles. You fight on American, on Soviet, on British, and on the side of the Axis powers. So these contingent affiliations stress that the game is about shooting, no matter at whom, when, where, and in the end, why. Now this guy here, Oliver Frljić, theater director in Croatia, plays, as many would say, his personal COD in contemporary theater, even though they find other words than I do for it. Born in Bosnia after studying dramatic arts in Zagreb in the 1990s, Frljić today is the most successful and award-winning stage director, and that in various post-Yugoslav theaters. In the last few years, and I will now mention a few of his stagings, and you can consult Wikipedia to see the amount of the projects he has realized so far, I will just mention a few of the projects he has staged in the last few years. One being Preklet najbo izdajalec svoje domovine, which means damned be the traitor of his home country, and it's a line from the Yugoslav anthem in Slovene, as well as Lexikon ju mitologije, quoting the title of a lexicon edited by the famous Croatian exile writer Dubravka Ugrešić, and both stagings were in Ljubljana, which today is Slovenia. Then he staged another example, Pismo iz 1920, which means letter from 1920, and it is the title of an often discussed Ivo Andrić short story about the hate in Bosnia. And this was staged in Sarajevo and in Zenica, which is both in Bosnia today. Then, another example I would like to mention is Otac na službenom putu. It is quoting a popular Emir Kusturica film from 1985 about Yugoslav political imprisonment, and its English distribution title is When Father Was Away on Business, a very good film, I can recommend it, as well as Zoran Djindjic. Zoran Djindjic was the oppositional prime minister and was shot in Belgrade 2003, and both stagings were in Belgrade, in Serbia. And the last one I would like to mention, it's the staging I'm going to talk about today, is Kukavičluk, Cowardice. And this was staged in Subotica and in Novi Sad, both in Vojvodina, which is Serbia today. I have no time to mention his stagings in Croatia, where Oliver Frljić is no less than a celebrity, his private life being commented in the yellow press. I brought here one example from Jutarnji List. It's a big Croatian newspaper, and it says Danijela Trbović and Oliver Frljić broke up. So I don't know about the US, but for comparison, in Germany, no theater director ever achieves this level of popularity to make it to the yellow press. So he's really very well known there. And Frljić, as the staging titles I introduced here indicate, obsessively provokes with his theater work. And that is what I wanted to show also with the staging locations list, he addresses all post-Yugoslav regions, turning his stage knife, we could say, in national wounds. Slovenia's painful relation to former Yugoslavia, Croatia's denied war crimes, Bosnia's cherished victimhood, or Serbia's shirking responsibility. These are topics of his plays. His unapologetic interference, we could say, with cultural and political issues in Yugoslavia's successor states has given him the reputation of a pamphlet director. The Croatian journalist and theater critic Igor Ružić wrote recently that Frljić is a pamphlet director who produces and evokes chaos where there was no chaos before and shouldn't be. Ružić affirms the impression that Frljić fires all over the place, less interested in causes than in running riot. By now, I know Oliver Frljić's work quite well, and I therefore strongly disagree with such assertions. Frljić produces dissent very well. And we will see today with one example how he's doing this. And he does so all encompassing. In turns, all sides are being attacked. But the chaos in the region, and my colleague Toma Lombinović might confirm that, the chaos was there before, yes, even though it is denied by many. So this is what Frljić's work is about. In an interview, Frljić said, referring again to Dubravka Ugrešić, this time to her well-known anti-political essays published in 1996, Culture of Lies, he said, "We live in a culture of lies in which defeats are deliberately misunderstood for victories and war criminals are worshipped as heroes. As a result," Frljić adds, "theater has to produce dissent to avoid being a theater of lies, backing what has become consensus in the present realities." So theater in Frljić's eyes is, and that we have, when we take into account his topics, we see this, a productive location of negotiating precarious issues. And the way Frljić puts post-Yugoslavia's problems on stage provides space for anti-nationalist self-perceptions. So Frljić, at first glance, random shooting of anything moving is his way of cultural playing within post-Yugoslav fields. I also brought, I don't know how familiar you are with the geography of former Yugoslavia, but here in this map I have marked with red dots the stagings I mentioned and earlier, and you can see that they are spread more or less over the whole range of former Yugoslavia. So what Frljić does is he establishes a theatrical post-Yugoslav space that is held together by the person of the director as cultural player. In that, he returns responsibility to the individual that is not supposed to hide behind collectives, behind be it collective guilt or collective victimhood. Both are mentioned very often in the play I'm going to talk about. I will also come back to this question of individual and artist responsibility at the end of my talk. There are also two theoretical frameworks for this renaissance of politics in European theater, and maybe at this point I should add this is not an exclusively post-Yugoslav phenomenon, it's something that happens in the whole of European theater, and therefore I would like to mention those two frameworks right in the beginning here. One can be found in the important, study on contemporary theater that Frljić's generation literally fed on. He studied in Zagreb at the Academy of Arts. And this study is Hans Thies Lehmann's Post-Dramatic Theater. The English translation, you can find it online, it is for free. The other framework was provided by the French philosopher and an icon, of course, of engaged art, Jacques Rancière, and his notion of dissensus. Both frameworks, vital for theater and drama arts today, hold art and artists responsible and reflect on the political within the aesthetic. I will also come back to these frameworks when recapitulating the artist's role at the end. Now, after these preliminary remarks, let's turn to Frölich's work itself. I have just half an hour, something like half an hour, to give you first insights into this remarkable but also very complex theatrical performance work he does. And this is not an easy task, I can assure you. I hope that the inserts that I chose and that I'm going to show to you will make it easier to imagine the nature of these very provocative, invasive, also disturbing, and at the same time, for good reason, award-winning stagings the director is praised, but also very often criticized for. So let's turn to the staging Kukavičluk, which in my eyes is the best he has directed so far. Kukavičluk premiered in Subotica in December 2010 and won the award of the best play in the very important theater festival Zrino Pozorje Novi Sad in 2011. That's when I saw it first in Novi Sad. Kukavičluk deals with more than one contentious topic and stages them within a theater trial that all the time accuses both society and theater itself. So Frölich's interventions always regard content and form. Kukavičluk is a complex play with many layers of allusions and contexts. I unfortunately do not have the time to elaborate on each of them, but I will introduce some. It is a play about guilt and responsibility, about war crimes, about memory, trauma, and about tribunals in theater and in reality. Kukavičluk begins with one solitary actress tearful statement in the form of a prologue that everything that will be said in the course of the performance is neither the truth nor reflects the opinions of the participants. She claims that she and the other actors were forced by the director, Oliver Frölich, to utter these sentences. The performance therefore starts with a framing of theater and alludes to the post-dramatic theater's renunciation of the sovereign status of text. The guru of post-dramatics, Lehmann, I mentioned before, he speaks of king text. And king text is dethroned in post-dramatic theater. Actors are no longer uninvolved performers acting out predetermined text they cannot influence. Instead, they are involved and responsible agents within the performance. And we find this in Kukavičluk, especially there in the documentary parts where the actors draw their text from their personal biographies and experiences. They tell, for example, where have they been when the NATO bombed Belgrade. But the emotional lament of this actress, she's crying while she is uttering this prologue, this emotional lament also points into another direction that has less to do with theater self-perception, but with enforced testimonials before a public court. The solitary voice in the prologue continues that everybody's standing in the dock here, but there can, after all, be no such thing as a collective guilt of, as she says, an entire people. This statement, of course, introduces the issue of Serbia's guilt, which includes the audience. Kukavičluk, for this reason, has only been staged in Serbia, and I'm quite sure Frölich wouldn't stage it anywhere else. So this is the central theme of Kukavičluk. Following this prologue, seven actors come on stage, so it's eight of them in the end, and they repeat verbatim, shouting and in chorus, Milošević's notorious Gazimezdan speech, all the while holding a Milošević poster in the hand. And this is the first scene I would like to show you. And you see them holding this Milošević picture, and when you see this staging, at the first moment you do not know, is this protest or are they fans of Milošević? But I'll try to give you an impression with this scene.
Zato danas i to je nešto nepravljeno. Već je iz Zorijski i sasvim apsolutno je to vaško pripadnosti Srbije i Evropi. To je svoj nepravljeno. Danas kao i te. come to talk with you. Because it is softly creeping, left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted.
So Milosevic's speech here recalls uncomfortable shared memories in the performance space of theater. Milosevic was, of course, as most of you know, Serbia's former president, and his Gazemazdan speech, the one they quote here, was used as evidence in the investigation of the charges leveled against the defendant in The Hague. In a translatio temporum, the past is transported to the stage as something unfolding in the present moment. As a catechresis, we could say, of the face, Milosevic here gives a face to something as yet unnamed, to guilt and to responsibility for what has happened. Serbia's former president, whose trial in The Hague ended without verdict because he died in 2006 in captivity, serves to remind the audience of, as Peter Handke wrote, and I'm quoting him here, the guilty verdict theater run wild. Handke, a provocative Serbophile, as many Serbs, and by the way, as many Croats, considered the tribunal in The Hague to have no legal basis and to simply play world tribunal. The theatrality of the ICTY, the International Criminal Court for the former Yugoslavia, in Kukavičluk is displayed in such a way that it is referred back to the performative act of judgment in theater. Theater and court, this has been impressively elaborated on by Cornelia Fissmann in her study Media of Jurisdiction. Theater and court, as a cultural practice and performative event, have evolved one from another. Also theater, of course, always has been a place of judgments. Kukavičluk's playing world tribunal itself shows, in short, that a theater court that illegitimately and self-righteously takes objectionable liberties can itself also deteriorate to a tribunal. Now, if there is a director in post-Yugoslav theater who has taken liberties to attack the audience and who has demonstrated how unpleasant contemporary theater can become for the spectator, for the actors, and for the whole performance context, it is Oliver Frljić. His provocation of the audience is, like all his interventions, calculated, and it is foreseeable from afar. Spectators regularly leave Frljić's performances scandalized because of same-sex kissing, pedophile priest characters, or props fashioned from raw meat, things like that. So while this kind of calculated protest builds more on the display of the inadmissible, on tabooed political and social contents and positions, Kukavičluk, this play here, is also concerned with a question of the operational and admissible form in which the spectator is turned into a witness of the truth expressed in theater. In Kukavičluk, Frljić exposes what is done by theaters today, even in his own previous stagings. Within the mantra of audience participation, the spectators are being brought to acknowledge their own presence within the theater space. Turned into participating witnesses, contemporary spectators carry responsibility for what they physically experience and register with their own eyes and ears. The general idea, in short, is that participation has not only to be demonstrated, it has to be made tangible in the presence of theater. Becoming aware of participation and of responsibility, then, holds true in equal measure for the experience of theater as well as of history. Kukavičluk now focuses also on the darker flip side of the communifying effect of participation theater that also relates to Serbia's current situation, and that is to bear public pressure. The play enforces participation by extracting a public political statement from individually cornered spectators.
So Frljić lets one actor equipped with a microphone jump around the auditorium and question randomly picked members of the audience about their opinions on homosexuality, ethnic minorities, or the acceptance of the International Court in The Hague. And here I would like to show you a short insert, a scene from the staging, and I'm quite aware that many of you won't understand the questions, but maybe those questions are less important than the way the people are questioned. So I'll show you this scene.
Stavili ste pristali nezavisnost Kosova u zamenu za platu 3000 eura. Ne! Da li je kosovski teran je omogući u Vojvodini? Da! Da li biste prihvatili rad u mesto na visokom položaju ako biste morali da sedite između homoseksualca i Albanca? Da je vaše vreme bilo u Beogradu 10. oktobra, da li biste više voljeli da je bilo među homoseksualcima ili među huliganima? Ne! Da li smatram da je srce od nevoz ove svoj plat, jedan od glavnih izvore vozu?
Did you understand the questions? Because the tone is
half and half.
Because the questions were, for example, would you accept the independence of Kosovo for a salary of 3,000 euros? Or is the Kosovo scenario also conceivable in the Vojvodina? Or would you accept a high position if you had to sit between a homosexual and an Albanian? Or do you think that the Serbian Orthodox Church is a main source of power? Or just the question, and this is just part of this questioning. It takes a few minutes, and one of the questions that is repeated is the Hague Tribunal, pro or con? Uh-huh. All say pro, con. Uh-huh. Or one of the questions is Vojislav Šešelj or Madeleine Albright? That was the last. And all of them questions say Vojislav Šešelj. One of the questions is also, by the way, should Ceca Raznatović be behind bars? Because this was in 2010. So the choice of questions, gay rights, ultra-nationalist positions, racism, and so on, makes clear that this is about a broad brush representation of the precarious overall condition of Serbia's society. The statements are extracted under duress, a procedure that brings the International Tribunal in The Hague again into the picture, which in the opinion of the majority of Serbs imposes itself on everybody excessively. A fact mentioned repeatedly in this performance. In the interview operation, not only the questioned spectators who see themselves exposed to the other spectators are put under pressure to say the right thing, also those not questioned so far need to worry constantly that they might be picked out next. Instead of creating a community of spectators that mutually acknowledge and empower each other, this is this idea of post-dramatic theater, the performance at this point produces one that is at each other's mercy. Hereby the question, what would in each case be the correct answer, one that is accepted by the community, is left very visibly hanging in the air, so that once again the status of truth is up for renegotiation. Does one give a view shared by the Serbian majority, which might be in agreement with that of one's average seat neighbor, but not with a politically correct one? The majority of those interviewed did in fact give revealing answers in this regard. They support Vojislav Šešelj, a Bosnia-Serbian ultra-nationalist standing trial in The Hague. They are against the ICTY, the tribunal in The Hague, and they purportedly have nothing against Kosovo Albanians, and are divided in the question of acceptance of gays. So the interview situation makes the audience aware of its double-faced identity. They represent the average Serbian view and are at the same time an adept and educated public, which as a theater audience is also under the pressure of the cultivated world tribunal. Those who gave homophobic or nationalistic views either had to bring themselves, or at least decide actively, to publicly voice politically not correct opinions. Or else, and this becomes noticeable, they express an opinion that, as announced by the actress in the beginning of the performance, does not represent their own, but that of a statistical majority. So the gulf between the globally recognized and the retarded Serbian stance, and the personal opinion, and the one given under pressure of the group, could not be made more evident. The involvement of the spectator, that is what Kukavičluk shows here, is informed by a pedagogical and re-educative impetus which is diametrically opposed to the democratization of the event called theater and presupposes the superior knowledge of a guiding force, the director and theater judge. He is the one who elicits the truth. Now, talking of truth, the truth about the war crimes in ex-Yugoslavia demanded by the tribunal in The Hague, Madeleine Albright, she's mentioned a lot of times in the staging, said when the tribunal was installed, she said, "This is no victor's tribunal, the only victor here is truth." The truth, so that is everything that people in Serbia think to know about Srebrenica, is qualified by Kukavičluk in a renewed act of truth-finding, without, however, refuting it. It is, of course, not about the denial of Srebrenica. The performance, which in a very differentiated way itself levels accusations against a great many things, and in so doing is also a tribunal itself, at the end finds its way back to a clear point of departure, which is liberated from all subsequent interpretations, the simple evidence of Srebrenica. After having opposed, in the course of the performance, the erasing of the all Yugoslav theater tradition, that's a thing I couldn't elaborate on here because of the time, but maybe you've noticed that the actors are wearing names around their necks, and these names are names of very famous actors from the old Yugoslav theater tradition, Kapet Tege, which was an old Yugoslav theater movement that was very important in Yugoslavia. And Oliver Frljić would like to revive this tradition. So his play opposes the erasing of this old Yugoslav tradition. It opposes chauvinistic attitudes. It opposes collective condemnation of Serbs. But he also opposes the denial of responsibility in Serbia. He opposes post-dramatic credulity with regard to the means of representation. It opposes self-pity in the aftermath after the Serbian NATO trauma. And finally, it opposes its own audience. Kukavičluk ends, after this veritable roundelay of accusations, with the eight participating actors, one after the other, reciting by heart 505 by then identified victims of Srebrenica. Those 505 names that they will recite there is the first group of identified victims. By now it's 6,200 of approximately 8,000, but it were the first 505 that they learned by heart. And this Srebrenica scene, I'm going to show it to you, it's the last scene of the play. And the play ends with this scene, and it's not commented on. It's a very amazing experience to see what happens within the audience that is confronted with this scene. So this scene begins with the explicit statement by one of the actors that the simple reciting of the names will take 12 or 13 minutes, and that beyond that, nothing spectacular will happen. So the announcing actor says, "Everything that will happen, if at all, will happen inside you." The, until this point, repeatedly disrupted division between stage and auditorium, which serves like the equalization of stage and audience, is then entirely suspended by floodlighting the spectator's seats. The actors recite from the edge of the stage and therefore disrupt their fictionalization as characters in more ways than one. on the stage, there is also the play's last prop. It is Kosovo as the trampled heart of Serbia, laid out in bowls of crunched up paper, in the middle small flags on stands with the names of Kosovarian cities. And the actors will dance kolo on this heart of Serbia, and then comes this Srebrenica scene. And I won't show you the whole 30 minutes, but two or three of them, just to give you an impression what he's trying to do there. It might be that we need to turn the
lights on, because it's a very dark scene.
U njoj ćemo samo nabrajati 505 imena ubijenih i identifikovanih žrtava iz Srebrenice, koji su sahranjeni 11. jula 2006. Neće se dogoditi ništa spektakularno, kao što smrt uglavnom nije ništa spektakularno. Nećemo nikoga da optužujemo, nećemo da dajemo tačne i konačne brojeve. Sve što će se dogoditi, ako se išta dogodi, dogodit će se u vama. Čućete imena koja vam ništa ne znači, koja su teška za izgovore koje smo naučili napad. Imena koja ne možete da povežete ni sa kakvim likom, jer su kolektivne smrti uvijek bezlične. Proći će neko vrijeme, jer je za izgovaranje ovih 505 imena potrebno između 12 i 13 minuta. To vrijeme je mnogo kraće od vremena koje je potrebno za ubijanje 505 ljudi. Ademović Azmir, Ademović Salih, Ademović Muamer, Ademović Fadi, Ademović Senaki, Ademović Mesud, Adilović Ahmet, Agić Aziz, Ahmetović Kasim, Ahmetović Munim, Ahmetović Abdullah, Ahmetović Izet, Ahmetović Sadi, Ahmetović Nazif, Ahmetović Nezir, Ahmetović Salko, Ahmetović Mustafa, Ahmić Aziz, Alimić Mensu, Alić Alija, Alić Ramu, Alić Elvin, Alić Emin, Alić Fadil, Alić Ševko, Alić Džemajer, Alić Jusuf, Alić Ibru, Alić Abdullah, Alić Sabrija, Alihođić Nani, Alić Ibrahim, Aljić Suljo, Aljić Ševal, Aljkanović Bahrudin, Aljkanović Behudin, Atanović Šaban, Arbić Mehmen, Arbić Ibra, Arbić Rešin, Arbić Bahrudin, Arbić Meludin, Arbić Kadi, Arbić Alvin, Arbić Rijas, Arbić Zeynju, Arbić Salim, Arbić Mehmen, Arbić Teufik, Bajraktarević Dahmo, Bajramović Mehmedavija, Baraković Meluj, Bećinović Ređo, Bećinović Sadi, Beganović Selma, Beganović Visudi, Begić Esed, Begić Dželar, Begić Mirsa, Begić Zajn, Begzadić Šaban, Begzadić Latifa, Bektić Mitra,
Bektić Ramu, Bektić Senata, Bektić Husein, Bektić Nezir, Bektić Muris, Bektić Jusuf, Bektić Izet, Budić Velija, Budjubašić Haris, Bobulović Fikret, Burić Kemo, Svrk Mojo, Čakanović Mehmedalija, Čanović Šukrija, Čano Ranis, Čakušić Ibrahim, Čehić Nurija, Čeliković Ibrahim, Čikarić Vesir, Činić Šukrija, Činić Muamer, Činić Elvir, Čiznić Šeko, Čokerović Elio, Čokerović Zija, Čerimović Mujo, Čosić Meko, Daukvašić Kira, Daukvašić Zija, Dauković Šaban, Dedić Fadil, Dedić Bego, Dedić Mehudin, Dedić Mustafa, Dedić Fahrudin, Dedić Nurko, Dedić Munira, Dedić Vahidin, Delić Rano, Tervišević Ribet, Izdarević Omer, Izdarević Mehmed, Izdarević Senaj, Duraković Emir, Džananović Hasan, Džananović Zifred, Džananović Džemal, Džananović Halid, Džanić Atmo, Džanić Mehudin, Džogaz Medo, Džozić Beric, Džozić Mefajev, Džozić Teufik, Ejubović Ibrahim, Emkić Nezir, Fejzić Osman, Gabeljić Šabat, Gabeljić Abdua, Gabeljić Salko, Gabeljić Ibrahim, Golić Alija, Golić Ismet,
Gurdić Hasim, Hadžić Hasan, Hadžić Mujo.
I'm very curious to hear what you think about this scene, but what occurs here, there are a great many effects that are produced here, but one of them is a meta-theatrical challenging of the boundaries of belonging and not belonging, of voice and voicelessness in theatre. This draws attention to the question in how far also the spectator is part of the theatre, and at the same in how far all those participating in the theatre are responsible for the presented event. Is it still actors speaking here, or are they, in this scene, real people? who is this reciting of names actually addressed to? The Srebrenica subject therefore spawns a far more precarious issue of belonging than that of simple participation in the theater action. On whose side is this performance on? Whose business is Srebrenica actually? And what do the people sitting here with me in the theater think beyond theater space? In the barely quarter of an hour, the audience undergoes a visible process of polarization and development. And it's really amazing when you experience that when you are there. While a number of spectators leave the theater, partly under indignant protest, I've experienced this in Novi Sad, they just shout things like, why don't you mention the Serbian victims, and then they leave the room. Some pick up cell phones and start texting. Others lean back disapprovingly with folded arms. Others begin exchanging perplexed looks. Some lower their heads, steeped in thought or in mourning, and not a few begin to weep during the recitation. It takes some time until the monotonous reciting of names to which no concrete faces can be assigned shows its effect in the audience. It is only by degrees that the dissensus of the audience becomes perceivable and the dissent among the spectators visible. The Srebrenica issue is palpably present, even though the singularity of the action, the pure enumeration, cannot be easily translated into the logic and terminology of the political discourse. In Kukavičluk's final scene, Srebrenica acquires the status of the exception, acting like the grant of pardon in relation to the law, or the miracle in relation to the course of nature. Who exactly does this mnemonic act of reproduction of names, which is difficult to relate to existing debates, accuse, and of what? At the end of the performance, Srebrenica leads the post-dramatic theater away from the committed stage, achieved primarily through spectator participation, towards a documentary investigative theater, which is the pure and simple bringing before the eyes, is accorded a particular potential for yielding the truth. Theater thus reverts to a more primal purpose, namely to provide contentious issues with a stage for negotiation. In this, the theater court of the performance of Kukavičluk not only demonstrates the cowardice of silence, it also brings the failure of the theatrical and, by the way, of the judicial language onto the stage. So as a theatrical tribunal, Kukavičluk concerns itself with the reinstitution of a lost equilibrium and with the balancing of the upset scales of justice, bringing the political present into communication with the voiceless dead and calling for decisions within the culture of lies. All those that are beyond the surrounding consensus of lies have no voice in the post-Yugoslav space, according to Frljić, who is following Rancière's political aesthetic theory. The issue of dissent in art has become theorized by Jacques Rancière, who has become a consistent point of reference for the debate within theater. In regarding post-dramatic theater as a politically and socially committed theater, a notion developed from Le Partage du Sensible, you have this on the handout, The Distribution of the Sensible is the English title, stages expect of themselves to make injustice visible. In his Distribution of the Sensible, Rancière, in whom the entire contemporary theater generation of those born in the 70s and 80s has absorbed itself, differentiates between politics as dissent made visible and police, which orders the space of everything sayable and doable and assigns to everyone a place in this order. What is usually understood as politics is, in Rancière's terminology, the police. It is this police which does injustice to equality in the enforced maintenance of consensus. Somewhere along the road, consensus always demands exclusion. So what Rancière demands of art, then, is to outline and to shift the boundary between those chosen by the order and those excluded from it. And to do this as a continuing process. For Rancière, it is the task of art, which defined in this way cannot be dissociated from politics, not to be political in the sense of a committed art, but to make the potential of its, he says, basic unsatisfiability, tangible for a brief moment. Only insofar does it have an emancipatory, truly political character, and does it constantly re-emphasize the fundamental equality of all and everyone, which, by the way, in Rancière's theory is not the goal, but it is the precondition of all politics. For Frljić, Rancière's responsibility of art represents a central point of reference in his post-dramatic stage work. In several talks and texts, Frljić has discussed Rancière. The Srebrenica scene, as well as this questioning scene, show very clearly, I'd say, Frljić's attempts to make dissensus, and therefore Rancière's boundary of those within the order and those excluded, visible. Theatre that spectators agree with is, for Frljić, consensus theatre that is based on lies as well. Public criticism and political intervention that his performances are subjected to are therefore understood by Frljić as a vehicle, as a productive expedient to create himself a theatre of dissensus. His projects, among which Kukavičluk, Zoran Džinđić, and Pismo iz 1920, all staged in the last 3 years, have caused a particular stir in Serbia and in Bosnia, and they see themselves as resolute acts of publicized search for the truth, in which a shifting of the boundaries between the consensus community and the group of those excluded takes place, at the same time rendering victim rights visible. Taking this into account makes it clear that what appears to be a random gunfire in Frljić's work is his Yugospheric, to use Tim Judah's term for the ongoing connection between the post-Yugoslav successor states, it is his Yugospheric range when responding to the political calling of contemporary theatre. Critics have very different opinions on Frljić's credibility, but definitely has developed a talent for causing quite a stir. And this alone, in the dishonest, racist, nationalistic, and corrupt context Frljić is interested in, might be valuable enough. He as a person deliberately absorbs the critique his work meets and therefore accepts full responsibility for everything said in his stagings, posing as individual role model for his society. And I would like to end with one anecdote. Recently, he refused to work on with Gavela Theatre in Zagreb, causing a stir again, because the theatre had withdrawn a poster which shows the Madonna in embrace with another woman. The poster was scandalized by the church in Croatia that saw allusions to lesbians in it. So many in Croatia commented that Frljić is doing this for very egoistic reasons that I'm going to ignore here, because what must be acknowledged, the poster and the affair made it to the news and triggered a heated debate on homophobia in Croatia. And without Frljić's intervention, I'm quite sure, no one would have noticed. Thank you.